everybody. Welcome to another episode of Mystery Crate. This is Dad Pod. My name is Roy Bellamy. Chris Cody over there in his house on a Zoom teleconference call. And Chris, my daughter has a new doll.
Really?
Yeah, brand new doll that she loves. She loves.
So is she sleeping with dolls? What's the process here? Do you let her sleep in her crib or bed with dolls, or is it just when she's awake?
Well, the unfortunate thing is she's sleeping with two dolls, her mom and dad, because she's coming into our bed now.
Oh, so you're the dolls?
Yeah, we're the dolls right now. We're trying to figure out how she's going to be able to sleep in her own room, but she doesn't want to sleep in her own room. We lay her down, like 9 o'clock, and then all of a sudden she wakes up at 1 and just starts sprinting to our bedroom. It's just, it's crazy. The first time that's ever happened, of course, I jumped up like going to someone else. All of a sudden, the door flies open, and it's this little...
That's got to be terrifying.
Yeah.
I feel like the one area that my wife and I are crushing parenting, as my daughter yells in the background, is with sleeping. My daughter goes to bed at 7:30, 8 o'clock, and she sleeps till 7:30, 8 o'clock. She takes a nap in the afternoon. Like, that is the one... Everything else, she's crazy. She's, like, cooking stuff in the kitchen. Like, I have no control over any other aspect of her. But in the aspect of sleeping, I feel like we're getting an A+ so far.
Yeah, we're still working on that. It seems like one of the only ways that Claire can fall asleep is if she's laying on top of me while I'm on the couch trying to watch a game.
That's adorable.
That's the way she can sleep. It is adorable. Yeah, but
see, Grayson doesn't want to sleep that way anymore. Like, she never wants to lay on me anymore, which is, I miss that. It's one of those things that have gotten to the point now where 6 months ago she was doing that. I'm already like, oh, so she's never going to sleep on me again? So you should cherish that moment, Roy. Look at this. Dad talk. Dad's talking about dadding it. Who are we talking to today, Roy? We got a good one for the people.
We're talking to Dominique Foxworth today.
If you said to me before all this, you can choose anybody at ESPN to be your dad for the rest of your life, I might have picked Dominique Foxworth because he's got the athletic genes. He's funny. He has a lot of, he checks a lot of boxes on who I would want to be my dad.
Yeah, he seems to have the father skills down. I don't question your choice there. That's pretty good.
Who would you want to be your dad? Anyone at ESPN?
Me.
Oh, yourself.
I would want to be my own father.
Very thank humble you. Of you, Roy. I am my father.
Anyway, I am my own father.
Let's get into it. It was a lot of fun. Dominique Foxworth joins us. Let's do it.
I mean, you guys, not really dads yet. One kid don't make you a dad.
Wow. No. There it is. That's where we have to start right there then. I mean,
we'll see about that then.
When does one become a real dad in Dominique Foxworth's mind?
Two kids becomes a real dad.
Oh,
two kids,
man.
Officially. It's like your rookie year. You're not a veteran until you make it through your through your first season, and then 4 games into the next season. That is officially when the veterans consider you a veteran.
Well, what are we looking forward to here? Are we looking forward to more temper tantrums? Are we looking forward to kids getting in trouble? What's going to happen?
You mean with the two kids? No, two kids is just – it's
double
real.
The trouble?
It gets real because then you have to deal with the way that they interact with each other. Then there's the old one-on-one versus zone joke.
Yeah.
There's just so many other complications that come up. That, man, if I hear that joke one more time, I have a response ready for it, though, when people, because I had my third kid, when people would come up to me and say, oh, you got a third one on the way, so man the zone now, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Or when I was about to have the second one, and I just always said that we had a matchup problem after two, so it didn't matter. Because we do have a major matchup issue. That second one, man, he gives defenses trouble.
Yeah.
I love him, but he gives defenses trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, aside from all, like, the lovey-dovey stuff that, like, obviously we all love our kids. They make us feel great.
Blah,
like,
let's
let's say all that stuff on the front end. But selfishly, I'm getting a lot out of my 2.5-year-old. I now can say, hey, can you go get daddy's phone on the counter? Can you go get me a bag of chips? And she brings it right back. Like, she loves it. It's like a fun game for her.
Okay.
Like, I'm wondering, like, what down this path, like, what are the most selfish things that you use your kids for?
I hate people who do that. That infuriates me. Those people are terrible. Your kid is not a dog to be doing to do tricks for you. I remember when I was a kid, one of my neighbor's mom was one of those moms who would have her son come in from outside. If we were playing in front of these like townhouses that we lived at when I was real little, she'd have him come in to change the channel of the TV because she didn't want to get up. And that just like, you know, those things that imprint on your mind at a certain age. And so every time I think about that, I'm like, man, I really hate having my kids do like little things like that, that I'm fully capable of doing. Like I'll have them do chores and have them give them certain responsibilities. But when it's just like, I don't feel like going to get some chips, I'm not going to be like, hey kid, go pour me a drink.
I'm the worst with that. Like I, the other day she was playing a game all quiet. Like I think it was an educational game. She was playing with her letters and I was like, can you go get daddy's phone from his bedroom? It's plugged in. And she's just like, sure daddy. And she like runs and goes and get it. And
I'm Wait a minute, the phone was plugged in?
Yeah. It was like plugged in my bedroom and I'm the worst.
Well, I mean, it seems like she's enjoying it. She likes it. It's not that bad. It's just, it's my own little hang up because I remember that from being a kid and thinking like, I'm never going to be like this woman because this is just torture. Like, we're outside playing a good game. We're having fun. Everybody stop playing because my able-bodied mother don't want to get up and walk and turn the TV. I got to go in and grab the remote. It wasn't like they didn't have a remote. I'm not that old. They had a remote. He had to go in and grab the remote and change the channel.
Well, I can't wait to have a son because once he turns 5 years old, I'm going to make him cut that yard.
Yeah, we have somebody to do our yard now, but I do remember cutting the grass was miserable. But now, I don't know if you guys have this sensation, but cutting the grass, like any type of isolated activity, doesn't sound too bad to me. Like cutting the grass, going for a walk, taking out the trash, power washing the deck. Like all that dad stuff that you're like, when you're a kid, you're like, I have no desire to do that. I'm like, hey, I throw in my headphones, listen to dad pod, and zone out and power wash away. That is definitely one of the daddiest things about me. And you guys probably don't have that because you only have one kid. So
yeah, that's true.
You don't yearn for isolation where I have to hide in the basement to do my job.
What is the thing that you do as a parent that you said you wouldn't do as a parent? Like with me, it's like, I'm never going to give my kid a tablet. They are never going to, in restaurants, my kid will never have a tablet. Like that was me beforehand. And now it's like, right, give it to her so she gets quiet.
Yeah. Maybe you definitely raise my voice at my children.
Right.
That's something that like I would always be like, I'll talk to them like they're adults and like I'll reason with them and I won't lose my temper. Uh-huh. And like, obviously I don't hit my children, but like when I was growing up, I planned that I would probably, kids would get hit, like, because I was hit, and that's what, and I became an adult, and I was like, yeah, I ain't gonna be able to do that, and then I went too far, I was like, nah, I'll never yell at them, because they just need to understand what's going on, just need logic and reasoning, but then they just do things that are completely illogical, and sometimes I lose it.
Do you ever hit them with the middle name?
Oh, the middle name.
Nah, I don't use the middle name that much. It's just a really loud first name. Mostly nicknames. Yeah, it's like a sharp, like just the first syllable of their name, and it comes out, and it's cutting. It's important. This is good to know for you guys. Don't use it too often. Hold on to that yell until you absolutely need it. Then pull it out. Because if you're yelling all the time, but if you hit them with one, like once every couple months, they snap right into shape immediately.
Dominique's right, because my wife says her middle name so often that she thinks that it's her first name now. It's very unfortunate.
Princess Claire.
So there's a saying that kids are a-holes. What is the biggest example of either one of your kids being an a-hole?
Wow, cutting right to it.
All three of them all the time are do a-holey things. I mean, they are nothing but adults without the capacity to effectively mask their desires. Like they think and do the same things that the rest of us do. They just don't care to cover it up. Like my instincts are much like my son's instincts, but I know not to do some of these things, or I lie about how I feel about these things, but he's like, I don't know no better. Like that base over there, I wonder what would happen if I pushed it off the table. I can't say as an adult I haven't walked past the same base and looked at it like, man, I'd love to drop this from the top floor and watch it shatter all over the place. But then I gather myself like, what are you thinking? You're a fool. And my son, on the other hand, is like, nope, let's grab this and go up the steps.
He also didn't spend the money on that base.
That is fair. That is also a that's another example of being a-holes. It's like all the stuff that we buy and give them, and they just don't appreciate it. And it's also our fault. It's the same as like yelling. It's like you create this environment where yelling is constant. They get used to it. So we create this environment where all these privileges are constant. They're just like, oh, I'm supposed to thank you for making me breakfast? Yeah, kind of. Like, yeah. I did kind of just make you some bacon and eggs. Like, I didn't have to. I could have given you a bowl of cereal. So, like, saying thanks would be okay every now and then.
Yeah, with the gifts, though, they expect you to give it to them. Like, they expect you to give it to them.
Absolutely. Here's one right here.
Yeah.
Hey!
Hey! What's up, man?
What's your favorite part about being a kid?
That there shouldn't be school during the summer.
Exactly.
So he's so right.
He's so right. So go upstairs and finish doing your schoolwork. I know you said there shouldn't be, but I'm explaining to you that in this house, there will be. I love you so much, buddy. You're so sweet. All right, but I'm doing work. I'll come up and see you in a little bit, okay, bud? Then we can make some paper airplanes, break some stuff. It. We can write and do stuff.
What are we breaking today?
I
don't know. We'll figure that out later. All right, go upstairs, buddy. I'll be up soon. You're still here.
Yeah. That's how it goes. This is the one podcast at ESPN where he's not really – this is good. Like, this is good for business right now. Like, this is yes, exactly what we need.
It's not a crash. I mean, I'm trying since I know that I'm being recorded.
Like, yeah, you're like, I'm trying to be very I'm respectful. Trying, please, son, will you
we
please?
We about to have to mute this thing.
You gotta give him the eye. You gotta give him that look.
It's gonna get wild.
Oh, he closed the door on you.
He heard us laughing, so he's feeling like positive, the positive reinforcement of
Oh, that's also the worst thing is like when there's like family or friends around and they just like are so amused by something that's disrespectful. No, like the family and friends are amused by something that's like disrespectful or misbehavior. And it's like they say something sarcastic and they just giggle it up. And I just look at them like, nah, you just created a problem for me for the next couple of weeks. Because he's going to be saying that nonsense all the time. For thinking it's appropriate. And then you're going to get him in trouble. Mm-hmm. You're not helping him. You're hurting him.
Yep.
Anyway.
Just wait till we get to the car.
Pause for a second. And mute.
Hey, boy.
All of a sudden, we just see like the kid flying up the stairs, like out of
looking like Jazz out of Fresh Prince getting thrown out of the mansion. He's gonna carry him upside down.
Meanwhile, ooh, the countdown. We got a countdown going on right now.
One.
I love a good countdown.
Two.
The countdown always works. The countdown always works.
It doesn't always work. It doesn't. I'm happy you did this time.
You were talking about like trying to rational, like explain to your kids how things work. I do that with my 2.5-year-old because she's into this that's mine phase. And like I'm like having like serious conversations where it's like, technically it's not yours because I paid for all of this. Like she's 2.5. She's not grasping any of it, but I'm just like breaking down. I'm like, technically mommy bought it and mommy and daddy share money. So this isn't yours at all, actually. And she just looks at me like mine.
I like that. I don't think that she has any trouble grasping it. She just is not for your nonsense. She looking at you like, go ahead, say all them words. You know what? Mine.
At this point, Claire is just taking food off of my plate. I mean,
that's you guys' plate. It's a share plate. Yeah, that's all. Yeah. That's hers.
Yeah, what, do they my ask, ass.
at two-ish, are they asking really hilarious questions? That's always the best part. Is like they just sometimes the questions are like so simple that we've just come to accept these things in the world the way they are. And they just ask something. You're like, actually, I cannot answer that. Yeah. Then other times it's just like, man, you stupid kid.
She's doing this thing now where she'll just go on like a whole paragraph and I get like 3 or 4 words out of there. It's like, I don't really know most of what you just said, but you were very passionate about it and I appreciate that.
Yeah, Claire's doing the same thing. The exact same thing.
Look at us. Just a few dads talking about kids. How would you describe your relationship with your parents and how you grew up?
It was good.
All right.
Yeah, that's my answer.
No, I mean, they were supportive. I used to tell this story to my mom, talk about kids getting comfortable with the world and as the way it is. It's like, I didn't realize that I had good parents until I got to high school. And like sitting outside after football practice, like my freshman year, they would be there waiting after practice over to pick me up and take me home. And then like there was like one time where they were late and I was sitting out there and I was hot.
Ooh.
Hot. I was hot. And then I'm looking around, it's like 12 other kids that's just chilling. Like, now this is what we do. Sometimes they get here, sometimes they don't. Sometimes I gotta call my grandmother, sometimes I gotta walk home. And I'm like, what? You stand for this nonsense? And I was just mad. And that was like, put it in perspective because like I knew that like they were kids who were like poor and like had real bad lives. But I was like, all the kids that I go to school with, like, they're good. Their parents are right. And then I started to learn a little more when I go to friends' houses and stuff. Like, I don't want to live here. So yeah, we had a very good relationship. We're very close. I was close with both my parents, and we still are very close. And now the relationship dynamics have shifted quite a bit, and I be trying to take care of them. And it's a whole interesting dynamic watching it happen. And also my mom is aware that it's happening. My dad less so. So like my mom makes jokes about it and is kind of embarrassed, but also kind of like, oh yeah. Cause she's also, her mother is in her 90s and she's like helping to take care of her mother. So she knew when that all shifted. And now I'm like, yeah, this is interesting. I got 3 kids, not 5.
How involved were your parents in your role as an athlete as a kid?
So they were, I mean, they were incredibly involved as far as like being active. They weren't like pushy at all. And I remember I told my dad I was going to be a professional football player when I was 6. And he like was like, all right. I'm sure he didn't believe me, but he was like, you should do something to get yourself closer to that goal every day. And I was like, all right, cool. So I remember that night I started doing sit-ups, and I guess in my 6-year-old mind, I was like, I'm going to do these sit-ups until I'm the starting running back for the Indianapolis Colts, which is where we lived at the time. And I ended up pooping my pants because just dehydrated myself and messed my stomach all up. But then I learned a lesson about moderation as a small child. And there was another time my dad, I was obviously a good Pop Warner player, and after a game, we had won the game, but my dad like criticized one of the cuts on a run that I made and was like, you probably should have cut back the other way. And I was like, you're not out there. And he said that he never gave me any more advice from that point forward, because he was like, yeah, I actually wasn't a good football player. You're right. I wasn't out there. you seem to be doing just fine. they go to all the games and they did all that stuff and were super supportive, but they weren't like active as far as like my dad helped me package tapes to try to get scholarship and all that stuff, but they weren't like active as far as like pushing me in that direction or like coaching. Like my dad was never the coach or anything like that.
What did they actually want you to do as far as the career is concerned?
I don't know. They never really, I never really heard anything from them specifically. Like, I assume like most parents, they want them to do like, I don't know, doctors and lawyers and that sort of stuff. But I was always like super ambitious. My dad still has like this art project I did in the 3rd grade that said I was going to be an NFL football player and a part-time pediatrician. And it's like an art project that I had to paint those 2 things, and he still has that. And so I don't think that they ever really needed to like push me. There could be a different thing could be said for my older brother, but that's his story to tell.
Right.
But yeah, so they never really, I was always super ambitious and like competitive and school and football and everything. So I don't know. I know one thing I told my dad off the bat that I'm not going to the military. He did 20 years in the Army before he retired. And not that he was asking me to, but I was like, nah. That ain't, there's no place in the white man's army for me.
That's a funny joke. Because I'm white.
Yeah.
Thanks for giving me that. I need
very
that,
much
I need
so.
That cover.
Very much so.
I needed that cover. All the white people listening now, it's okay. Out of my mentions, your representative, Chris Cody, said it's okay.
Well, now that you bring it up, what about the world has your parents taught you? About, you know, as we see what's going on out there on the streets today, back then it's a different era, but now a lot has changed. So what have they told you about what's going on in the world back then?
I mean, It's probably a similar conversation that all black kids have with their parents, is like the, you're going to have to be twice as good and you have to be extra careful when you get pulled over. And like, I had all those incidences with the police. Like I survived all of them, obviously, but like the stories that I'm sure you could tell, Roy, I can tell too, where I got pulled over and police called a bunch of backup and they made me get out the car and do all this stuff that was completely unnecessary because whatever reasons, but that stuff. And my mom did a little bit of a victory lap not too long ago, because she brought up some time when I was a teenager when I think I said that my parents were too obsessed with race, and she like got super mad at me and yelled at me then. And I at that time didn't feel apologetic, but like I didn't have the same experience. And when you're a teenager, you just have a different view on everything. And then, I mean, obviously I'm much older and I was like, yeah, you guys were preparing me for something that I had no idea about. So she actually randomly, like a couple weeks ago, brought it up, because like I wasn't the type that like fought with my parents or argued or yelled with my parents, but that was like, it sent, like she snapped and went off on me when I said that when I was a kid. So it was like something that I've always remembered. And she's like, you remember that? And I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, you're right, mom. Okay. You haven't been right in 20 years, but that one time, I guess you got it. You get that dove.
Give me an example of something you did to get in trouble as a kid. Were you a troublemaker at all? Like, was it more like as like a kid when you were like younger, just being a crazy little kid, or maybe like in high school, like partying too much? I don't know. You actually weren't a big partier. I knew that. But what's the most angry your parents ever got at you?
So I got in trouble a bunch because I wasn't a snitch. So like my older brother, just the two of us, and we were tight, and he would do stuff, and then it's spankings for everybody until somebody talks. Wow. And I wasn't gonna talk. So that was that. I feel like my mom's been more mad at me as an adult than when I was a kid, because I was a kid, I did all the stuff that I was supposed to do, and it was never any trouble. Like I was student council president, and like they never gave me a curfew, and I would go to a bunch of parties, but I wasn't drinking, and I would come home and it was all cool. Like we didn't have any issues. But as an adult, it's like that transition into being an adult is like super unusual for like a professional athlete, because like you're like dependent on them. And for most people, there's like a gradual kind of transition, but then the next day I was like, I don't need you no more. It's like, what? Like, and it's a tough thing. It's a tough dynamic to balance, because part of it is like decisions that I'm making, and I'm partially right about, like, come on, back up. And also it's kind of like, actually, you don't know what you're doing. You're trying to buy a house and like a single family home, and it's just you, and you're doing all these things, that type of trying to make grown-up decisions at 22. When you're technically a grown up and have the money to be a grown up, and then your parents are stepping in to be like, hey, you, like, we've been there, we know that. And I'm like, nah, you ain't never been there, you don't know what it's like. So that is more tension. And now she just gets mad at me if I don't FaceTime her with the kids enough, her and my dad. That's it. It's like, if I go a week without FaceTiming them, she's like hot.
You said your dad was in the military, right?
Yep, 20 years in the Army.
How much of that influence, was imparted on you, being a military brat?
Yeah. We lived a couple different places. We spent most of our time in Baltimore, but we lived in Indianapolis for a little while. It was like one of the worst a 2-year period where he lived in Pennsylvania and we lived in Maryland. And that was like awful. Like going to the airport and like that stuff is like some of the saddest memories I have. It's like, all right, see you in a couple months. That's the main memory I have from it. But like my mom, as is the case in my house now, the woman of the house kind of sets the tone. So like she was not like military crazy discipline type as you would expect from military person. So our house, we never really lived on base, and like the way that the culture of the house wasn't like some strict military situation. So I don't know. I don't think people would know. And like there's nothing about the stereotypical military brat experience that I feel like my childhood was like. My childhood was more, it's like regular black, middle class black family type of stuff with one incredibly handsome athlete.
Man, don't That's do me, your guys. Brother like that, man.
That's me, guys.
It kind of annoys me how much you had your shit together as a kid. Like, it seems like you were just, like, the perfect kid. Like, you knew you wanted to be a football player from, like, the age of 6. You started doing sit-ups right after that. In high school, you never got in trouble. You were always the responsible one. Like, did you do any – like, give me the story of you just being, like – like, I don't know. Give me something.
I mean, there's plenty of stories that I got – I mean, they trusted me. So, I remember my freshman year, my brother was a senior my freshman year, and I, like, showed up in high school acting like I was in charge. So, there was, like, this senior or junior kid who hated me because I, like, maybe me and his girlfriend got to know each other. So, there was a party in our neighborhood, and the boy was telling everybody in school, like, I'm a beat him up at the party and blah, blah, blah. He better not come to the party. So he's just trying to punk me. And so the school we went to was like not our home school. It was like a magnet school. So it wasn't our neighborhood school. And it was better than our neighborhood school or neighborhood school. The year I graduated from high school, my neighborhood school, there was a shooting at the graduation, just to give you some context. Yeah. So we still had a bunch of friends in our neighborhood school. So my brother rounded up, 2 cars of them to come to the party. And so we went to the party. The person, it was a house party. The person whose party it was ended up calling the police. And because the guys that we brought came to fight, they did not come to party. And so then we all scrambled, driving, running away before the police got there. And then the next morning, my parents asked us, like, how was the night? We were like, cool, no problem. And then they were like, showed us a gun and like a cigar tube that had like weed residue in the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we're just wondering because we found these in the car this morning, and and like they trusted me and my brother, so it didn't turn into a huge big thing.
Yeah.
But they were really upset. I was like, well, let me tell you the story.
You snitched a little this time. Not snitched,
No. Those people weren't my brothers. I had one brother. Those other dudes. The one of them is a state trooper right now, by the way.
Good for him. Hey, listen, man. It wasn't me.
Yep, and the only people that got arrested were my friends from school. 2 of them got, well, not arrested, but like detained. They were like my friends who do not live in the neighborhood, who are all sweet kids who went to this magnet school.
Man.
Yep. Good times. So I guess that was probably one of the major.
There you go. That works. That makes you like, it makes you look, you still seem like you were a pretty perfect kid, but that's something. Weed paraphernalia is involved. That's close enough.
It's a firearm. I drove with a firearm. That's true. Cody. Yeah, like that'll true. Give you. I don't get no cred.
No, you do.
Man, I didn't know it was in there. I mean, you know.
Yeah, like, that's true. I would have been scared out of my life. I was upset because I didn't even know that they had it. They didn't tell us they had them, and I'd have been scared if I knew, because I thought I was just picking up some people. We're gonna go intimidate these guys and move on. No, they came for real problems, and I was like, no. I'm not a real problems type of guy. Like that's not that's not what I do.
I don't know. If you're gathering a group to start up a fight, I would think that there's gonna be that one guy that really wants to probably end the fight at that point.
No, that was the problem, because we framed it to them like we gotta go take care of something, which we should have been like, no, we're going to a party. That was an error in framing. So they came amped up, ready to take care of something. And
you never know.
It's a syntax error. That's why.
Yeah. So that I got in a little bit of trouble for that, but we were fine.
Now I'm wondering, with your kids and being a former NFL player, and I've seen your house, so you're doing all right for yourself. So I'm wondering, like, what areas do you try to, like, what steps do you take to make sure that your kids, like, you know, don't have it too easy and stuff like that?
Right. I don't worry so much about them having it too easy as much as I worry about them having an understanding of the world and responsibilities and stuff. And I think that trying to keep them abreast of what's going on in society and keep them informed about And I mean, they're 9, 7, and 4. So like, this is all relative without making it too heavy on them, but also giving them responsibilities and talking about consequences. And I think the hardest part is making sure that the consequences are followed through on. I mean, this is all just like basic parenting stuff, because like, I have no problem with any of that stuff, but sometimes my wife has, he's like, but they're just kids.
Right.
Let them off the hook. And I'm like, yeah, fine. But also, for real, I told him that if he didn't do this, then this is going to happen. And so the consequence needs to happen. But one of the things that I think is interesting is the older I've gotten and the more I know about other people's families and even my own kids, it's like, we don't have nearly as much influence as we think we do. Yeah, like we all, and you like stress out, like that's one of the pieces of advice I would give to any other parents is like, do the best you can, but don't stress yourself out. Like, just create a safe place for them where they can feel comfortable and they can like come to you if they need help and give them sort of guidance. But like the idea that some little minor transgression, if you don't let it slide today, that they're going to grow up to become strippers and murderers, like that is far-fetched. Like, so much, it's so much more like innate. I feel like the people that we are is so much more innate than we want to give it credit for. We want to think that we have so much more control, and that's probably true of life in general, not just parenting. We all want to think that we're like the protagonist in this movie. Yeah. Every decision we make makes such a great difference. Nah, man, this ain't TV. Just do the best you can.
Well, it seems like one of the instincts that kids have is rebellion. So what would be the greatest rebellion that either of your kids have had against you and your wife?
Every day.
Every single day.
Every single day. I told you we got matchup problems with number two. So
that's true. Yeah.
The girls on either end is one thing. So my oldest is a pleaser. She's like doesn't want to upset anybody and does all, is like a great athlete and is a great student. I'm in a book club with her and some other dads and their daughters, and she reads faster than me. It's embarrassing, but it's true. Where it's like we both get the same book in the book club, and she's like one night she's like read 200 pages and I'm like on page 50 of some children's novel, and I'm like, I don't want to tell her, but it's like, yeah, you actually are smarter than me already. And then the youngest one is 4. So like her life is a rebellion, because 4-year-olds just are selfish as hell. And then the 7-year-old is like pushing buttons all the time, just trying to see how far he can take things. And I think the most rebellious thing he does is follow the rules on the first time. That is like, for him personally, I feel like he is either going to be president or going to lead a coup. Like, those are the only options. Like, he is not a follower that I'm never gonna have to worry about. If I get a call because he got in trouble, I'm not gonna be like, hey, who you hanging out with? No. I'm gonna be the one who the parents call and be like, hey, your son told my son to do this. Like, so I respect that and love that about him, but just making sure we guide all that energy in the right direction and all that consequences stuff that we were talking about before.
How much of the world do you think that they understand right now from what that you've told them already?
Yeah. So, I mean, they ask a lot of questions. And so like, I've always been one and who's been like, it's not, well, I don't feel comfortable lying to my kids. And like, if it's something too heavy for them, maybe I'll try to change the topic of the conversation, but like, this stuff has been all around and you can't avoid it. So like, we've gone to a couple protests with them, socially distanced protests. The school that they go to organized a couple protests, and I think that's important. Like, we picked a school that we felt like our views aligned with the views that we have, and we're going to pass them to our children. And so I talked to them about everything. Like, they know who George Floyd is. They know what happened, and they understand why it matters and why it's important. And so like, and just outside of this climate also, it's like one of my closest friends had a daughter before me, and I remember when she was like 3 or 4, she was talking about her vagina and she called it a and I was like, I will never, like, I tell my kids the right sexual organs, and they ask questions about where kids where babies come from, and I explain to them like what sex is and like how this stuff happens, and like it's just, I don't know, it just seems like the right thing to do.
So you did that already?
I can handle it.
So you did that already? Wow. Okay.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the 9-year-old, of course, like she asked a bunch of questions, and I'm like, yeah, this is what happens, and we've had conversations about puberty. The 7-year-old, like, he doesn't ask as many questions about that stuff, but like he understands the basic concepts, and we don't use any slang words or anything. It's like, well, my son uses them sometimes just because he can get laughs when he says balls. He gets a good laugh no matter right. who's around. He's crafty that way. But otherwise, we try to keep it real. I don't know. I don't want to scar him. That's my thing. It's like, I feel like I don't want to, I don't know. Lots of people have issues late in life and they blame it on their daddies. Daddy issues get blamed for everything, especially with 2 daughters. I try to make sure that I do not give them any sort of daddy issues.
Did you give him the other talk yet, as far as how to compose yourself around police?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's a little boy, so like he's like obsessed with aggression, and to that degree, like he also is like likes little Nerf guns and has an affinity for the military, and also like doesn't understand the full context of police necessarily. So like we've had these conversations because like we spend a lot of time around black people. So like I can't have my son out there like speaking about these issues in a way that we don't understand, or like or suggest that he doesn't understand it. You know what I mean? And that's a tough place to be. I know he had some Nike made some shoes that were like themed around police and firefighters, and they're like $20. So I scooped them for him and he had them on, and one of his friend's dad was like, oh, cool shoes, because one's red and one's blue, and he was like, oh, what's it say? And it like said something about police, and I don't think my son knew it, and then he got all upset because like we had these conversations about like what was happening, and I was like, well, it's okay, like, blah, blah, blah. Talk about the importance of all these things and understand everybody is a person, but there are systemic issues. And I don't know how much it landed on them, but you just keep having them talks over and over again until they get it, or until they tell you you're racist, like I told my mom. And then you wait until they're 37 years old and you say, told you.
Mm-hmm.
Your kids are not at the age yet where you're embarrassing them, right? Like doing things to embarrass them. Are your kids making fun of you at all yet? Because that's like a thing that starts to happen eventually.
So we're a joking household. So we all make fun of each other all the time. But we're not at the point where I'm embarrassing yet. Like my oldest still loves to have me around. And I think my window is going to be a little longer because relative to other dads, I'm like on the younger end, and I also like played in NFL. So like for my son, it's cool. And I mean, most of the dads in my kid's school got me by 5 to 10 years and also have never done anything nearly as cool as me in my life.
Right. And as we're talking about football, knowing what we know now about concussions, do you believe that you would want your son to play football?
I don't, but the terrible thing is he really loves it. And I push him away from it at all costs. Like he played flag football, and it's not even that he's like exceptionally good at it or anything, but maybe it's just like he knows that I did it, but like he is obsessed with Lamar Jackson. He loves Patrick Mahomes. He loves football. Anytime you ask him any questions about, he doesn't say that he wants to be a professional football player, but he like just wants everything to be like football themed, and he just loves it. And he always asks me, can he watch like some of my old games or something, and I still haven't let him, and I never will. Like, I don't know, it's just weird to me.
You gotta give him the baseball, Dominique. We gotta bring those black numbers up, man. We gotta bring those numbers up.
Nah, that means I gotta sit and watch baseball. I'm good. We're gonna hit these books.
I mean, you could just walk around the ballpark or the park or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I'll bring a book.
We're going to get you out of here soon. Thank you for joining us. What is, you got me, you made me think of this when you mentioned your kids' schools. Like, what's the awkward conversation? Do you find yourself in a lot of, like, with other dads of kids that you go to school with and them just like, what's John Elway like? Or like, just like, just, you know, just like, are you ever in like uncomfortable conversations?
Occasionally, not that often, though. I mean, I guess so. My daughter's been there at this school since kindergarten. So, and now she's going into fourth grade. So, like, I've been around enough that it's not, there's a couple, I mean, there's a couple guys who are like weird and want to ask a bunch of questions. And it's not too bad, though. You just give them a dirty look and then they move
listen.
On.
I know what it is. They listen to Dad Pod, so you don't want to badmouth.
Yes, they do.
That's it. I figured it out.
I'm gonna name names. They know who they are.
So when your daughters grow up, how are you gonna handle them dating?
That's interesting, though, because like I fancy myself a progressive dude, and I mean, I am, and I would like to treat them dating the same way I treat my son dating, but I can blame society. There are certain different things about society, but like, if I'm being honest, there are also things ingrained in me. Maybe I've been socialized to think that way, but like, I think it's going to be challenging to treat them the same way because there's concerns like about like, I hate to get too graphic, but like date rape is like a thing that happens for high school and college age girls. It doesn't happen to boys nearly as often, if ever. And it's not. So like those concerns are out there, but I also want them to feel like a freedom to do the things that they want to do and not put themselves at risk. So I'm going to try my best by the time we get to that point, which it's around the corner, as much as I want to pretend like it's not. I know my daughter and her friends talking about boys that they think are cute at 9 and 10 already. So like, I know it's coming, but I just hope I get to that point and try to instill some like responsibility in them, but also not try to make the girls specifically feel like dating makes them dirty or whatever. Like there's a lot around that, and it's mostly like dads trying to
terrifying.
Yeah.
I'm but just I mean, saying, still, I have a daughter. I'm just like thinking about those like thoughts and conversations. And I'm just like, I have no clue.
I'm just thinking about fighting them.
I just don't want to pass that stuff on to them because like I, as much as I say that I absolutely feel differently about my daughters and my son when it comes to dating, I know it's wrong, but I absolutely feel differently about it. And I don't want to pass that on to them, but I do want them to know that it's out there. So
I don't know if I'm reading a book by its cover or if I'm reading you right. I get the feeling that you will not let your kids win at anything. I just see in you a competitive person. Like, I don't see you. I think I see you teaching life lessons with things like that.
You're kicking their ass in Monopoly, man.
You're wrong.
What?
Mix it up.
Wow.
Mix it up, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, this is my position on that. And my position generally on everything is different kids need different things. And the same is like if you're in a workplace and you're managing employees, you're on a team with teammates. Like one of my coaches, college coaches, said this, and I was actually an NFL coach, said, I'm going to treat you all fairly, but I won't treat you equally. Because I think somebody was complaining about, I think Champ wanted to stay over at the city we went to. And they were like, sure. And other people were like, can we? I was like, nah. Well, I'll treat you fairly, but I won't treat you equally. But in this instance, it's like different kids need different things. Like people respond to things differently. And so like continually dominating one kid might give that kid some drive and they'll keep pushing, keep pushing. And continually to dominate another kid might break that kid. And I think it's important to understand that sometimes I give the kids a little win because they need a win. And then when they get full of themselves, I slap that shit out the backyard. Yep. I get no points. Just let them know. Like,
exactly.
You know, daddy's still in charge.
That is some genuinely good advice on Dad Pod. Look at this, Roy. Look what we've created. A fun environment where you can actually learn some shit. Look at us.
That's right. I learned a lot of stuff. I can slap that shit out of the backyard once Claire starts learning how to play soccer and I'm the goaltender.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Dominique Foxworth, thank you for joining us today, man. Did you have fun? What did you think this was going to be going in, and what was it?
I mean, I listen all the time, so I knew it was going to be. Exactly what I expected. See you guys next week.
All right.
That was a lot of fun, man. That was very informative, and I really loved the portion of that interview where his son walked in on him. And he knew there was some discipline.
I feel like we got a good feel for how he handled it. He handled it well. Firmness, not aggressiveness, telling his son what needed to be done. And his son actually seemed to listen, which, you know, I'm taking – like I said, Dominique is the perfect dad.
Yes, he's a veteran in these father and child wars out there in these streets.
Roy, what's going on in the LAF network for the people this week? Boo, 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 boo.
We got an interview on Southeast Sessions with Dan and Bomani Jones that happened, that was released yesterday. And it's actually informative. It's very good. You would want to listen to this because this is how Bomani actually rose to the ranks. And he got very candid.
It sounds like there's a hurricane going on in your house.
That's the piano. Claire, can you wait 5 minutes?
Dad pod!
Yeah! All right, let's get out of here. Check LAF out. Check all those podcasts, all that jazz. We'll talk to you when we talk to you. See you later.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.